Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about JP Morgan Chase building up their FinTech prowess and a big withdrawal in the world of Bitcoin. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, as usual, a lot of great things happening in the world of FinTech. And with me to talk about them is Steve.
Hello, John and everybody.
And we're happy to welcome back Monica.
The podcast prodigal daughter.
Our returning champion.
And Burning Man survivor. All right, let's get started with what's going on with JP Morgan. They want to kick some ass in the fintech space, huh?
It seems like they do, yeah. So a few weeks ago, we talked about how there's a lot of things that sort of systemic things that mean that banks actually can retain some advantage over fintechs. This play by Chase can be one of them.
Great follow-up article, Steve.
We always keep up. We always do keep up. So it was announced recently that Chase, they acquired a company called WePay, I believe in 2017, for $400 million. And now they've announced that they can do same-day settlement for credit cards for SMBs. So what that means is that typically, if I go to a coffee shop and I pay for my coffee, the vendor, or the merchant rather, won't see it until, say, 2 or 3 days from now because of the ACH settlement times. Now, with this new product that Chase is launching, you can essentially get the money into your account, even from a debit card, from a credit card purchase, that's very same day.
Yeah, I was surprised they said up to like 5 p.m. Pacific time. You could get that money that later. You could be drunk and go out to the ATM later that night and get that money.
I think that's a main use case. You know, we all know that sort of money takes time sometimes to get to where it's going. So, you know, one of my biggest frustrations is when I see when I open my banking app and my mobile app and I see that I have pending transactions.
Steve does not like a pending transaction. If you're a regular listener, you know about this.
Steve lives for real-time payments.
And his credit score.
And his credit score, yeah. Which is now, that's not as great. But anyway, this is really interesting because this actually, it'll be free for merchants as well. Mm-hmm. So merchants can opt to get this service for free so they get their money settled into their accounts that same day. And this actually contrasts with what you see from, the big fintech players like Square and Stripe charge a 1.5% fee to get your money the same day.
Yeah, usually, you know, the innovations are supposed to be coming from the fintechs and keeping way ahead of the big banks. Well, but one small caveat is you have to have, to get the same day deposit, you have to have the bank account at JP Morgan Chase also.
Well, right. Yeah.
Which is not a big sacrifice.
It's not a big sacrifice.
But it explains why they can do it so quickly versus going, if it's going to another bank, it's got to go through the whole, you know, reconciliation settlement process and
all that. Well, of course. Correct. I mean, why would JP Morgan offer this service to merchants who are not their client? And for my part, when I read about this, I thought, oh, that's so interesting that Square and Stripe have long had this capability, but they've been charging a very substantial fee because, you know, 1% isn't a lot on that cup of coffee. But when you add up 1% over your daily
receipts, 1.5%.
Was it 1.5% for both of them? I think one of them charged 1.5 and maybe one charged 1. But either way, whatever it is, it adds up to be a lot of money. But of course, you know, they could just decide that they don't need that incremental revenue as much. And then all of a sudden, you have a commodity war. Yay!
Yeah, wow. You know what's 2.7% is the amount that the Square stock dropped after this announcement.
I did not see that. It's pretty interesting. So, you know, it's interesting because this is, of course, a huge benefit for the merchants. Mm-hmm. But I wonder whether other treasury service providers like Chase or other big banks or something can actually adopt this model and we can all see faster settlement of payments on credit as well as opposed to debit.
I mean, why wouldn't
they? I hope and pray.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that timeline looks like, but it doesn't seem to me like in a world that where people's expectations about speed and settlement are constantly getting higher and the technology allows for it. I mean, who's going to be able to kind of say, nah, we're just going to stick with our 3 days?
Yeah. Hmm.
So Square can do it, but they'll just charge you for it. Oh, so it's not necessarily Maybe they're just lending the money ahead?
I think they're just lending you the money.
The settlement can't be going through that quickly.
The settlement is a federal requirement that requires that 2 to 3 business day thing. So I think Square is just lending you the money. But Chase,
because. And that's where the fee comes in.
That's where the fee comes in.
Chase is actually completing the settlement.
Chase actually owns the rails on which the transaction runs, so they can actually do the settlement.
And that's why the WePay acquisition gave them that.
The ability
rails.
To do that stuff, yeah. Well, they've had the rails before because they're Chase. They have a merchant acquiring business. But now with WePay, they can actually integrate it all better and have that, again, that same day settlement, which is pretty awesome. Hmm.
And do we know what Visa and MasterCard have any part to play here?
I don't know, actually.
Does the float matter to them, I wonder?
The float matters to everyone.
The float matters to everybody, yeah.
I mean, does that... do they get the float, or do the banks hold on to it and then it goes to the other one?
Everybody holds on to it for as long as they can.
Exactly. I think that's a play, yeah.
Chase in this one case.
Yeah, yeah. So could this be maybe the beginning of sort of banks hitting back against these, you know, newfangled fintech things?
I don't know.
Do you think it's the beginning? I think they've been trying to land their punches where they can.
Yeah.
I mean, what's rational behavior?
It seems to be. But
if you lose 20 battles and win one battle, is that really winning, though?
I will just make one final comment about the float. I was reading something about Charles Schwab, and they were talking about how something along the lines of 57% of Schwab's profits is basically net interest income. Like, Schwab could offer absolutely everything it does to its clients for absolutely free, and they would still be profitable. And that just goes to show you how important the float is.
Stay out of the headlines.
Stay out of the headlines, yeah.
You never see Schwab in the news. I keep looking and never see him.
Only for good stuff.
All I know is I'm putting all my money into Bitcoin.
Seems like not a great idea, John.
What? That's what all the smart people are doing. I'm going to copy what they do.
It seems like it is. No, actually, there's some really interesting Bitcoin news also. Earlier this week, it was reported that some big Bitcoin whale, pulled out $1 billion in Bitcoin, guys.
$1 billion.
I'm putting my pinky up to my mouth, by the way. But yes, $1 billion. So this actually got a lot of press attention, but some unknown person was able to pull this massive, this is the biggest single withdrawal of Bitcoin in history.
Well, we'll know when they file their IRS disclosure.
Of course. Yeah, we'll all be aware of what happened. So. Yeah.
I know. I'm thinking the same thing. The IRS is like readying the subpoena.
Yeah. Who is this person? So, you know, my thinking is it could be a hedge fund. It could be some like crypto-based fund or whatever. But people are saying also in the darkest corners of the web.
Some people are saying.
What's the Greek name for that? People are saying. There's like a Greek name for that rhetoric maneuver of saying people are saying.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like part of like the logic thing. Anyway, I'll Google it.
The Greeks.
In the show notes.
What about the people in Belarus? What are they doing? What about them and what they're up to?
What about the Cypriots? Shady Cypriots.
Oh, I like that one better, yeah. Because that's actually very applicable.
It is applicable,
that does get said very often.
Yes. or the Turks. But actually people are saying that this could be related to the lawsuit going on now between Craig White and Australia and the supposed other person that created Bitcoin as well.
So this is how he's going to pay his legal bills?
That's what people are saying.
That's a hell of a bill.
It seems like a hell of a bill. No, he's actually being sued because the estate of the other guy who claims to have also co-created Bitcoin is suing this guy for all the proceeds that they got from the creation of this, and also because they have all these Bitcoin stored in their wallets.
The biggest winners are the lawyers.
They are. They get a nice cut of that. But it's
and they get all the fees.
They do get the fees. Yeah.
What are these two guys going to win?
I know. Yeah. It seems like, by the way, we get a new person saying, I created Bitcoin every 6 months, right?
Why not?
There's some guy from some Palestinian, like a few months ago, it seems like. There's Craig White in Australia. It seems like every now and then it's like, I did it. Not really.
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably have people 50 years from now claiming they did it and they're 25 years old. So.
One note of this is pretty interesting, going back to the article here, is that they pulled $1 billion maybe like a week ago or so, and now that same amount of Bitcoins are worth $967 million. So.
But that entity has a cool $1 billion in their pocket.
Yeah, it's still,
so they knocked down the price a little bit. What's the overall total valuation now? $200 billion?
No idea.
Less than that, right?
No idea.
And slowly growing.
It is actually growing. Yeah.
It is slowly growing.
Bitcoin and gold.
A little bit more gets mined every day.
Yeah.
The number of Bitcoins. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I wonder, do any of you think, what do you think is more likely, an individual or an entity?
It has to be an entity. I think it has to be a pool of people doing this. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I buy the Craig White story, but it sounds like either a massive fund shifting money around or something like that, but not one person. I don't think one person can actually own $1 billion in Bitcoin, unless we're very early on in the stage, but that's my take on that.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that it's an entity as well.
So, you know, it seems like there's a lot of new things going on in Bitcoin, this massive withdrawal,
I just saw something going up. That there was this malware that gets coded into Bitcoin as like part of the message, and it gets used as so even though your antivirus software blocks off some connections to this malware, it'll still connect through using the Bitcoin that you have
That's fascinating.
As well. So it uses it to get around antivirus, anti-malware.
But what about the dream of total security?
Well, like everything else, it's going to be maybe in the future, Bitcoin will be all advertisements and viruses, just like the rest of the internet.
Just like the rest
HODL,
of the internet.
HODL, yeah. HODL, HODL.
They say it's going to replace the internet, so that means mostly malware, porn, and...
Whatever. I mean, the internet... Bitcoin is the baby of the internet.
It is the baby of the internet.
So total replacement seems unlikely, but whatever.
Repeal and replace, that's what I say.
According to Mark Andreessen, you know, he mentioned that essentially Bitcoin is now where the internet was in 1993. So like we're just beginning to see the use cases. So of course he also happens to be invested heavily in the currency.
Maybe he's part of the entity who pulled out a billion.
Yeah,
All right, now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the interesting story behind it. Monica, since you're just joining us back again, start us off.
Yeah.
What you got?
Yesterday, the U.S. government announced that it was putting almost $1 billion, federally committed dollars, to artificial intelligence research.
Because we don't have any real intelligence.
Well, so interestingly enough, this is actually the first time that the federal government has given kind of agency-specific requests for spending on artificial intelligence. It was announced by the chief technical officer of the United States, which I didn't even realize we still had one.
Yeah.
I thought that went away with Obama. What they're saying is that they are hoping that this will allow the government to better identify investment opportunities, do strategic planning across different parts of the government, and find ways to collaborate with industry and academia. So you would think like, hey, you know, that's really good news. Maybe it's a few years late, but it's good news.
TLDR, Monica.
Yeah. I would say not everybody agreed, because basically as soon as this happened, some of the companies that were even participating in this kind of announcement event, representatives from Intel and NVIDIA kind of were like, the U.S. needs to do a lot more than this. So they were already kind of poor-mouthing it, right?
As saliva's spitting out of their mouths, like, that money.
Yeah. I think when you contrast the dedicated spending that the U.S. government has in this space to someplace like China, you can certainly feel like NVIDIA and Intel have some very good points. But at the same time, it's a good thing that we're at least here. You know, I think that some of the finest technological advances that we enjoy today have come from public-private partnerships where the U.S. government has funded the initial research and then we find ways to commercialize it.
Velcro.
Nuclear weapons.
Ballpoint pens, right? I think ballpoint pens. Yeah. Wasn't that like for space or something?
That's the pen you can write upside down.
The upside down pen.
The pressurized.
From Seinfeld, right?
Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
Pen from Seinfeld.
But Velcro is pretty sweet. And also the
Velcro
internet.
Velcro is pretty sweet.
You know?
The internet, yeah.
And the internet is sweet and sour.
Yeah.
So $1 billion, not exactly. It's like $973.5 million, but let's just round it up and call it a billion and hope that we get some positive artificial intelligence out of it instead of like, you know, ethnic isolation camps like what they're doing in China.
Awesome.
Cross your fingers.
Awesome. John, what's your number?
My number? I actually have a trivia kind of number.
Ooh, I love trivia.
And so, he just gave us jazz hands.
Yes, I of course I'm going to do jazz hands. Alleluia! That's right. You know, you think when you're on your phone and you check your balance for your bank and everything, you think, oh, everybody does that, right?
I certainly do.
Yeah, sure. It's normal. For actually only 72% of people who mostly bank online. This is from a survey that I just read about. And I was like, oh, 18%, they said, typically go to a bank branch for their transactions and take care of their business.
I'm going to say that there is a very big age disparity between the 72% and the 18%.
it's not just age. It actually, in some cases, some rural customers prefer going to the branch because they get that personal connection as well.
Ah, because they might not encounter as many people in their day-to-day lives, and so right. It's a place to have a human connection.
It's a social call. Yeah, it's, you know, there's Becky at the teller line. Hi, Becky. How are you?
Is it Becky with an I?
It's Becky with an I, of course. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's of course a lot of older folks, you know, the geriatric crew. But I think a lot of it is also
your first phrasing was kinder.
Yeah.
The geriatric crew, and sociable people.
And sociable, yeah.
And people who have been, and I kind of pointed this out before, like a while ago, like people have been ripped off or had been hacked or something, like, you know, maybe the branch isn't so bad.
Yeah.
I know. I was actually thinking about that in terms of, you know, you wouldn't necessarily want vulnerable elderly people to just be doing everything online.
See, but where, not just elderly is my point.
Well, it's never just. But, you know, when you look at who's a, you know, a very sought after mark for fraud and that kind of thing, a lot of them are geared towards more elderly people. And many, many times it's actually people who work in the branch who are the ones to kind of flag it up and raise it up with other caregivers or family members or account holders. And that's a good thing.
Speaking of targets for fraud, one target I saw was relatively recent immigrants from India. And so call centers in India that have gone bad, have gone rogue, end up targeting their Indian compatriots in the United States and pretending they're from the Homeland Security or the IRS, telling them that they're going to get deported unless they give them money. And a lot of ways that they do that is by using these gift cards to get the money. And they read the code off after they've bought the gift card. And because they're afraid that the police are going to come. And so they'll threaten them. They'll say, if you don't give me, you know, $5,000 of gift cards, I don't know how you get up that high, but I think
multiple transactions,
a lot of gift cards where with the IRS or with immigration, you have to pay this right now or you're going to be deported right away. And with the current attitude towards immigration, you know, people are a little bit more scared. It sounds believable. It sounds more probable.
Yeah.
So there's people who are vulnerable in a lot of different ways. Sure.
Well, pro tip, if it's not your idea to buy the gift card, don't buy the gift card.
The IRS does not take payments in gift cards.
Yeah. Not yet, anyway.
The bottom line I'm trying to point out here is
it's the IRS. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't pay your tax bill with an iTunes certificate.
With an iTunes card, yeah.
Best Buy, however, will always work.
This is Tim Cook, and I need you to go buy. Yeah. Yeah, but it happens, and they do that because it's it makes money. It works, and people lose a lot of their precious savings.
Back to the final bite. When's the last time each of you entered a bank branch?
Yesterday.
To transact or to pass through?
And they made a mistake.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Actually,
yesterday.
It's like the third time they've made a mistake in my account. When I've gone up to a teller this year.
Okay. Mm.
And yes, only one of them caused a big problem for me.
I went last summer to get some euros.
Okay. Oh, I think I've gone the longest. I think the last time I entered a bank branch was the day my husband and I closed on a mortgage.
Nice.
Oh, I think that's a good read. I'll give you a pass on that one.
We had to do the wire. And also, by the way, there's a ton of fraudulent wire activity out there. So you want to make sure you do your wire right.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Get those numbers right.
All right. Steve.
Actually, speaking of scams, my number is 97%. So this is a study conducted by academics in Brazil. And they found that there was a company that was basically trying to get people to become day traders and would sell them books on how to, you know, how to play the stock market.
Yeah, I see those ads on YouTube and stuff
all the time. It's very prevalent. It's like Herbalife, but for financial
learn our method of stock picking, and I made my
Herbadollar.
Herbadollar. By the way, another word of caution here. If somebody tells you they have a get rich quick scheme, it's to make them rich, not you rich.
But what they do mean it literally.
But they do mean it, yeah, but it's the other way. But what they found is that out of all the, they actually tracked all day trading activity in Brazil from 2013 to 2016, I think. And they found
big data set.
And they found that 97%, that's my number, of people who traded, who became day traders to this company, lost money.
Sounds about 97%.
Right. And they actually, the only people who actually made money is 0.4%. Are those that made profit? And the average profit, $310.
Oh, God.
So,
oh,
wow. You know, if you're buying a book on how to become a day trader and make money by trading stocks,
the thing is, even if you have a good strategy, if everybody uses that trading strategy, it squeezes the profit. Just like in the real world market, if you have a, you know, successful sandwich shop, but 10 more sandwich shops open on your block, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
So you get squeezed out.
It's the, what is it? It's a tide that lowers all boats.
Yeah.
So
too much preying on the vulnerable and hopeful.
All right. Just 97% of them.
Yeah.
It's day trader. Then I think slightly above them in income is Uber driver.
Yep.
And then it's intern at, actually those interns make a lot of money, right?
They do.
Yeah. I was going to try to think of something shittier, something interesting.
If it's the one here, they make about $120,000.
Yeah.
If you annualize it for an internship year.
Yeah. And sometimes they get free housing.
They do. Yeah.
That's a rarity in the Bay Area.
It is.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for that, Steve. Well, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. And thanks for listening.
It's great to be back.
Great to have you back.
I got your back.
See you next week.